This is WXPN in Philadelphia.
WXPN, and it's 12:02. This is the Women's Consciousness Raising Hour, and I'm Diane Trombley. Today is, of course, Election Day, and we're going to be listening to some discussion and music to vote by. With such a close election, the vote of minority groups is going to be especially important. So we're going to open with some music, and then we'll hear an interview with Joanne Wolfe. She'll be discussing the position of the candidates with respect to women. The first song is called No Hole in My Head, and it's from the Virgo Rising, the Once and Future Woman album, and the next song we'll hear is The World in Their Pocket by Melvina, and it's from her Held Over album.
Everybody thinks my head's full of nothing, wants to put his special stuff in, fill a space with candy wrappers, keep out sex and revolution, but there's no hole in my head. Too bad. Call me a dupe of this and the other, call me a puppet on a string, they don't know. I have lived since early childhood, figuring out what's going on. I know what hurts, I know what's easy, when to stand and when to run, and there's no hole in my head.
Too bad.
So please stop shouting in my ear, there's something I wanna listen to, there's a kind of bird song up somewhere, there's feet walking.
bad.
Everybody thinks my head's full of nothing, wants to put his special stuff in, fill the space with candy wrappers, keep out sex and revolution, but there's no hole in my head. Too bad. They've got the world in their pocket. Pocket, pocket, pocket. They've got the world in their pocket, and they're up there in control. They've got the world in their pocket. They can shake it, they can rock it, they can kick it for a goal. They've got the world in their pocket, but their pocket's got a hole. There's inflation and pollution. Everything's been bought on credit in this rotten institution, and they waste the gentle people, 'cause the system has no soul. They've got the world in their pocket, but their pocket's got a hole. They've got the world in their pocket. Pocket, pocket, pocket. They've got the world in their pocket, and they're up there in control. They've got the world in their pocket. They can shake it, they can rock it, they can kick it for a goal. They've got the world in their pocket, but their pocket's got a hole. Unemployment is their glory. If a million children starve, why, that's an old familiar story. And there's rage and there's rebellion, and there's grief from pole to pole. They've got the world in their pocket, but their pocket's got a hole. Got the world in their pocket. Pocket, pocket, pocket. They've got the world in their pocket, and they're up there in control. They've got the world in their pocket. They can shake it, they can rock it, they can kick it for a goal. They've got the world in their pocket, but their pocket's got a hole. Takes a war to keep them perking, and they have to bleed the world to keep their bloody system working. But the system's self-destructing while they play that gangster role. They've got the world in their pocket, but their pocket's got a hole. They've got the world in their pocket. Pocket, pocket, pocket. They've got the world in their pocket, and they're up there in control. They got the world in their pocket, but their pocket's got a hole.
Now we'll go to the interview with Joanne Wolfe. I think you'll find her discussion to be pretty informative. As many of you may have noticed, women's issues haven't gotten much attention in the press during this campaign, so it's a little hard to know where the candidates stand. So now we'll have the tape. My guest today is Joanne Wolfe. She is the convener of the Women's Health Concern Committee and a member of NOW, and also a member of the board of the Bicentennial Women's Center. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Let's begin by talking about the party platforms. How do the parties differ in what they technically promise women?
I can't remember from the time that I've been able to vote a more polarized set of platforms. It just amazes me to read down the list. I don't think the Republicans and Democrats agree on very much, and it is ironic to note that the one thing that they do agree on is the Equal Rights Amendment, and that it should be ratified. And that was even a struggle, if you recall, at the Republican convention.
Right.
That took a lot of hard work and some dedicated Republican feminists to really push that through.
Let me ask you one thing, Joanne, here. What were the major groups against the Equal Rights Amendment, at least at the Republican convention?
Well, there clearly was Phyllis Schlafly and her followers. And the Republican convention did have a very conservative group of people who did embrace Schlafly and the anti-ERA people. And, of course, you know, the biggest funders of the anti-ERA campaigns have been the insurance companies, big business, who are worried that equal rights will mean less profits for them, and that they'll have to end some of the discriminatory practices which they now are a part of.
Maybe we'll get into those later, more specifically.
But I am glad that the Equal Rights Amendment has been embraced by both parties. Now, some of the other areas, there are real differences. And the first one, I think, of greatest importance to women is around the economy and unemployment. Clearly, that has been the issue of this campaign. And it is interesting that in the debates, women were mentioned very infrequently. But it is clear that unemployment and inflation hit women hardest.
Why is that?
Well, first of all, I think it's 53% of all women are working outside the home. And many, and they're in the lowest paying jobs, and they very often, many of them have just begun to work. So the last hired or the first fired.
No seniority, in other words.
That's right. So they're laid off most quickly. And many of those women are the sole supports of their families, certainly with the rate of divorce and separation in this country, more and more women are finding it absolutely necessary to work. And many people still do not believe that that working is not a luxury for women, that it's a necessity. And that has been reflected in some of the political discussions. But they are women's issues. And women also who are dependent upon the income of a spouse who has been laid off. So I think that they're the issues women are looking at very clearly, closely. And the Republican and Democrat platforms approach those issues differently. We'll have a continuation of the same kind of policy that we have with the Republican platform.
How would you characterize that?
Basically, trying to deal with inflation, but not a strong kind of, it's been a cross of different tactics, the wage price controls, and then they decide that's not good, and then something else, but not a strong commitment. The Democratic platform does call for full employment and really cutting down unemployment by providing more jobs and a guarantee that all people who want to work can have a job. Let's hope that becomes a reality for whoever becomes president.
Right. Are there any other specific areas of the where the platforms dealt with women's issues?
Yeah. I think that another key issue for women is the whole area of child care. And that, again, is related to work. And I think child care is an issue both for women who are at home and for women who are working. But if we are saying that we want less people on welfare, that we want jobs for everyone who want to work, then we have to have child care.
Right.
We have to have 24-hour child care. I know working in health, for example, a hospital worker has no options because you can't get a babysitter to work the shift from 10 to 3 in the morning. And so that many workers really are prevented from working because of the lack of child care.
And the expense, too, I think.
And the tremendous expense, right. It's almost not worth working when 3/4 of your paycheck goes for child care. We have seen that President Ford has consistently vetoed child care legislation, and that he recognizes child care only for a very small segment of the population, and the number of spaces available for people for children now, existing centers, is minute next to the need that's been expressed.
Well, who does Ford think qualifies for child care?
The way the regulations, and we certainly saw that in Philadelphia last year when we saw thousands of people on Broad Street, is that only people who are on welfare, who have a job, are eligible. Of course, then that prevents you from looking for a job. And it also, again, I think discriminates against the working poor and middle-income people who need child care in order to work. The Democratic platform, I think, is very strong in this area. Certainly, Mondale is a very important figure nationally in terms of child care advocacy. He's introduced the major legislation that deals with comprehensive, good child care, where parents and teachers say what that's going to consist of. And I think that is a strong part of the Carter-Mondale ticket and the Republican platform that is dedicated to that. It's interesting also to note that Rosalynn Carter considers that her top priority, and that she has, when speaking, said that she will work very hard to get a comprehensive, quality child care program initiated in this country.
So the Democratic platform has come out strongly and specifically in that area.
Yeah. The other issue that is, I guess, closest to my heart is health care. And I did a real in-depth analysis of both party platforms. And again, it's very interesting. The debates never mentioned health care. And I'm sure if we polled people, it would come pretty high on the list. When you talk to people, they do first talk about food on the table, which is also related to health care.
Right.
But more and more, and I know from working on locally on the Blue Cross Consumer Coalition, that people are hurting when it comes to paying for health care. And middle class people especially are feeling that they're just being priced out. Matter of fact, last year, Americans spent more than $133 billion on health care, which is over 8.3% of our gross national product.
That's amazing.
It's big business, and there are real big interests by both insurance companies and big business in keeping the health care system the way it is, which is very expensive for us and very profitable for them. The platforms do reflect that, that the Republican platform opposes a compulsory national health insurance program and feels that the most efficient and economical method to improve the health care system is to build on the present health care delivery system. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting, because clearly we're not in a position to throw out everything that we have, and that certain things that we've developed in terms of delivering health care are what we're used to and what we want to maintain. But I think what it comes along with that is the inequity, the fact that this health care system is based on disease and not health. The fact that our health insurance pays for hospital care but not outpatient services. The fact that we become sucked into this, that we wind up going into the hospital to get a test because our Blue Cross will cover it, rather than a less expensive treatment on an outpatient basis, because it doesn't.
That's right.
And we are paying a tremendous amount of money for that, and We are also suffering, not so much in Pennsylvania, because we do have the state ERA here, which really has changed insurance benefits for women in Pennsylvania. But in many states, women still cannot purchase certain kinds of disability insurance. It's more expensive for women to purchase health insurance.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, absolutely. We in Pennsylvania have really been the pioneers, and the report that came out of the Pennsylvania Women's Advisory Committee under Insurance Commissioner Denenberg did outline how insurance companies, both private and Blue Cross, did discriminate against women and have taken some action to eliminate that discrimination. But what we realize is that if we do have a continuation of the present health care policy and insurance,
which
means
Ford,
how you pay for it.
This is what Ford advocates.
Right.
Okay.
That along with that comes that discrimination. And I think that that's upsetting. Also along with that, you know, besides the high costs, is the profit motive. And you know, what does that mean? For women, it means a lot of unnecessary surgery and drugs. And it's clear to me that merely changing the way you pay for health care isn't going to clear up all the problems. We're still going to have the attitudes of doctors and that, you know, treat all of us, men and women, like children the, you know, what I call the M-deity. But we can influence some by the way we pay for health care. And saying that we're going to continue the present health care policy means that we're going to continue a disease-oriented, very expensive system that caters to those people who can afford good care. Mm-hmm. The Democratic platform does favor a comprehensive national health insurance program with universal and mandatory coverage. That means everybody will be included, hopefully from birth to death. And that would be financed by a combination of employer-employee shared payroll taxes and general tax revenues. Now, this scares people a lot because, I mean, on one hand, people say, finally, you know, what happens if I'm laid off and I don't have any health insurance, or my baby's born? You know, lots of policies, newborns are not covered for a certain amount of days. So, you know, that is a tremendous advance, and many of us would be relieved to know that we would be covered. But the details of that are overwhelming.
And how about the cost?
And the cost. That's that's exactly it. And the criticism has been by the Republicans, my God, you know, what are you going to do? Now, the Democratic platform does say that they're going to have strict cost controls, quality controls, that they will, including payment mechanisms like health maintenance organizations that encourage preventive care, and also determining costs in advance, so that like the way certain insurance companies work now, you wind up paying whatever they charge, and they can continue to charge and charge and charge, and the insurance company has to pay. This in the kind of system they're talking about, they would have the cost fixed in advance. The other important issue there is that there would be incentives that would encourage preventive care, early detection, outpatient care, things like pap tests. I mean, isn't it ridiculous that our present health insurance will pay for a hysterectomy but not for a pap test?
The cost is somewhat different, too.
And it does affect women even more than men. First of all, because women use health services more. But secondly, because women are dying of the diseases that can be cured by early prevention and detection. Diseases like diabetes, like reproductive cancers. So that is particularly important to us as women. And the one thing that we do know about health, and we don't know that much, is that a baby that's born healthy has a good chance of living a healthy life. And I think that if we can begin to have good prenatal care in this country that is available to everyone, regardless of their income, then it's going to cost us a lot less as a nation for health care.
Has this been statistically proven that a healthy child,
yes,
throughout its life will...
That is the major index of health or morbidity. It has to do with infant mortality. And unfortunately, Pennsylvania and Philadelphia in particular have very high infant mortality rates. The other issue related to health care is abortion, which clearly has become a major issue in this campaign. And I personally don't like to see abortion as a political issue at all. I think that that it is a personal and religious choice, and that it doesn't belong in a political campaign.
You know, Joanne, I think probably a lot of people would agree with you, because I don't know, did you read the recent results of the study done by the Washington Post, Harvard team, which they interviewed a broad spectrum of people and found that most people pretty much agree that abortion is an individual right, but it seems to be giving the politicians more problem than the ordinary citizen.
That's right. And, you know, I think that the other important point is that abortion is a reality of life. There always has been abortions, there always will be abortions, and if there are going to be, I personally want to see them safe and available to all women, regardless of their income. And we have a Supreme Court decision that does make available abortion. There are constant attempts from Congress recently to undermine that decision and to try to not spend government money on abortions, which has the effect of saying, okay, it's okay for wealthy women, but poor women can't, which is so blatantly unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. And I personally am offended that so much time has been spent for clearly political reasons by our legislators debating these issues that are clearly unconstitutional. And, you know, many of them have even admitted that they just voted for it to get votes. And it seems to me to be unconscionable to vote for unconstitutional legislation. But that's what's been happening, and we will have a court decision soon. The platform positions on abortion are very interesting. The Democratic platform, and I'm going to quote from it, recognizes the religious and ethical nature of the concerns many Americans have on the subject of abortion. It feels that it is undesirable to attempt to amend the United States Constitution to overturn the Supreme Court decision in this area. The Republican platform favors a continuance of the public dialogue on abortion and supports the efforts of those who seek enactment of a constitutional amendment to restore protection of the right to life of the unborn children. Well, I think a constitutional attempt to prohibit abortion not only takes that choice away from individual people, where I think it belongs, or women, most specifically, but also, I feel, undermines the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And the whole concept of individual liberty and religious liberty in this country. And I just feel very strongly about this, that it is totally inappropriate here, and that it is a very political kind of maneuver. I'm glad that the Democratic platform does not support a constitutional amendment and recognizes the differences of opinion. I am concerned that that Carter himself has waived and has said occasionally that although he personally opposes abortion, that he also feels the government funds should not be used. But I understand that his latest position is, and there has been litigation very recently about this, so I think it is understandable that people, opinions might be changing at this time, is that it is a decision that will come from the Supreme Court. but I think it's very scary to see that something that many of us have worked for, we realize is a part of everyday life, is so threatened, and is being, that we as women are really being used in this campaign.
For strictly political ends.
For strictly political ends, yes.
Now, you've given us a basic outline of the issues in the two-party platforms. Do you feel that there are any really important women's issues that were skirted by both parties, completely left out, that you would like to see included in their platforms?
I think probably at the convention, the most controversial issue was the participation of women in the parties themselves. And I know that the women who did participate came away disappointed from both conventions, feeling that there was not a real commitment to participation of women in the political parties themselves.
Yeah. I think that was a general feeling. Okay, let me ask you this. What do you feel are the three or four most pressing women's issues that must be dealt with during this next presidential term, the next 4 years, no matter who is elected?
I think that some of the issues that I just mentioned, and in addition, clearly, we do need an equal rights amendment. Leaving it state by state is totally unenforceable. And we need continuing enforcement of the civil rights legislation that we now have.